Hi everyone, Michael Cohn from GSV here. Thank you to everyone for joining from around the world for week two of our Digital Summit series on the dawn of the age of digital learning. We have a great program for you today here on Channel 2 on how the coronavirus response will change the future of K-12 learning. We'll begin with Phyllis Lockett, CEO of Leap Innovations, hosting a conversation with an esteemed group of school and district leaders talking about how they are navigating this new normal. After that, Tom Vander Ark, CEO and partner, Getting Smart, will convene leaders from some of the most important technology companies talking about how EdTech has just hit light speed. As a quick reminder, there is other programming happening on channels 1 and 3. We'll put a link below so you can see those other conversations taking place. If at any time you want to attend a different session, you can go register for those now or at any time and receive a separate link. And with that, I'll hand it over to you, Phyllis. Phyllis.
Great. Thank you, Michael, and welcome everyone. It's such a pleasure to be here with all of you. Shout out to Deborah Quazil, Michael Moe, and the GSV team for enabling us to have this forum. I'm really excited to be here today because I've CEO of Leap Innovations, and have been working on personalized learning for the last 6 years. And, you know, when we think about the disruption that COVID has created, inherently and disconnecting 55 million students, suddenly being disconnected from their primary learning environments, this is truly a moment in time. I am thrilled that we have assembled today a group of rockstar leaders who are on the ground and on the front lines every day to help ensure our students' education continues. These leaders represent a slice of America, from large urban school districts to the suburbs to rural communities, and together they're going to give us a glimpse of how they are navigating and also, more importantly, how they are innovating during this unprecedented time. I'm very excited to introduce Susan Insville, Superintendent of Highland Public Schools, Marie Esquero, Chief Academic Officer of Miami-Dade Public Schools, Scott Fraheim, CEO of Distinctive Schools, David Miyashiro, Superintendent of Cajun Valley Unified School District, and Tom Rooney, Superintendent of Lindsay Unified School District. To kick us off, for context, if each of you could take a couple of minutes and describe what is happening in your community with the students that you serve and the steps you've taken to ensure instructional continuity. And Susan, I'd love to start with you to kick off. Then we'll go to Scott, Marie, David, and then Tom.
Thanks, Phyllis. Good morning, everybody. So I am the proud superintendent for Highline Public Schools, which is a district, richly diverse district, serving about 18,000 students. We're located in Burien, Washington, just south of Seattle. I'm in my 8th year as superintendent, and in those years, I've really come to believe that how we talk with, to, and about our children matters. So we describe our children as brilliant, beautiful, and brimming with promise. And after I tell you that, only then will I share that we face all of the challenges that many of my colleagues that you're also going to hear from here in districts across the country, especially in urban settings, face. So roughly 7 out of our 10 children rely on us for most of their meals. We have over 100 different languages spoken in our system, and many of our students come to us speaking a first language other than English. So given the demographics of our district, the last several weeks have been a real challenge. I think like many of my colleagues, our first response was to make sure that our students' basic needs were met, which meant food. So we are distributing, like everyone else, thousands of meals per week, breakfast and lunch, looking to add dinner as well, and partnering with our local schools foundation to make sure that families have the groceries that they need. We've also deployed over 10,000 devices for those students who don't already have one at home, along with the supplemental paper packets. We hate to use the packet terminology, but that's what we're doing, to make sure that those who don't have internet access have something to do. We are working fast and furiously to make sure that every child is connected. However, we are having a hard time securing the number of hotspots that we need, not from a budget standpoint. I've set aside the budget, but actually just securing those hotspots. And I will just end with this, that connecting our students with broadband through broadband access isn't just about them accessing their learning. It's about them staying connected to their teacher and their community, which is incredibly, incredibly important at this moment in time.
Hey everybody, I'm Scott Fronheim, the CEO of Distinctive Schools. We are based here out of Chicago, a nonprofit charter school management organization. We have nine campuses now across Chicago and Metro Detroit. When we saw the closures coming, we started to prepare. We saw some of the superintendents here on this call and others across the country who were about 2-3 weeks ahead of us. So we were able to study and learn some of what some of the other districts were doing. I'm really proud of our staff and our community and the way that we've come together. In the same way that Susan mentioned, we had a phase one, food, getting devices out, making sure that resources were sent out. And then phase two, really understanding structures, parameters, and boundaries of each day and what we're asking teachers and students to do. When we saw the school closings coming, we went ahead and sent one-to-one devices home with every single student, which we're really proud of, and the way that our tech team came together and broke through boundaries of what we used to do and taking up our carts and making sure the kids had access and we're taking them home. Right now we're seeing about 85% of our students fully engaged daily, which is really, really something we're proud of. Second phase is launching next Monday. So we did have spring break this week. It was important to us that we gave our teachers a break because they've been working 3 weeks plus on just around the clock supports for kids. So aligned to our diversity, equity, and inclusion goals for this year, there was a collective action that came from our teaching staff that I'm really proud of. And everyone's saying, we have to start now, even though we don't have a plan or a program or a model, let's start and let's figure it out together in an iterative and fun, innovative way.
Is that me? Am I next, Phyllis?
Yep, you're up, Marie.
Hey everyone, I'm Marie Sciardo. I'm the proud Chief Academic Officer for Miami-Dade County Public Schools, our nation's fourth largest school district. We serve 350,000 students over 35 municipalities. We have about 53,000 employees, about 20 some odd thousand of them are our teachers. And our student population is very challenged. We are a large urban school district. 75% of our students are economically disadvantaged. Over 20% of our students come to us speaking a language other than English. And we have about 10% of our student population, which sounds little, but in a body of 350,000 is quite a bit of our students are in our exceptional student education program. We are an A-rated district, and I believe that there are steps that we've taken in the last 6 years. This administration has been in place now for 11 years. My superintendent has going on 12. And there were some steps that we took early on, not knowing that this was going to be our reality, that I think positioned us in a way that gave us kind of like a leg up, particularly when we're dealing with such a massive school district. And that was a result of the vision of our school board and our superintendent in trying to get to one-to-one. We started that process that we call it digital convergence around 6 years ago. And so what we really are is at a 3-to-1 in all schools, and in our fragile schools, a 2-to-1. What that means for us is that we have around 200,000 devices at our disposal, which is very helpful. And we don't need all 200,000 in our homes. We did survey students before closure. We closed on March 13th. We started surveying our kids on March 9th. We gave them a week to complete an online survey. We got 208,000 responses. And we have well over distributed more than the amount of computers that our students and our families were indicating that they needed. We're at 85,000 device distribution. We're going at a clip of about 800 devices a day. We're also feeding our families. I wanna say that the superintendent announced today that he's close to 500,000 meals. 500,000 meals have been distributed in Miami-Dade County to date, all through charitable donations and philanthropy locally, which is really exciting. And so we're currently in our third week of remote learning. We had two phases, as Tom mentioned. The first was just standing up something very quickly so that our students and our families felt supported. Our focus was primarily our students and our teachers, obviously, at the beginning. We called that our instructional continuity plan. At the time, we didn't know it would be 1.0 because we thought we were talking about a very short amount of closure, 2 to 3 weeks closure. And since then, that has developed into our instructional continuity plan 2.0, which is publicly available at icp.dateschools.net. And what we consider ourselves as our enthusiastic curators, we do not have a learning management system in Miami-Dade, but we do have a very robust toolbox of digital content and scope and sequencing or pacing guides at the district level. So we narrowed that those pacing guides, curated the content that supports those standards and benchmarks. And we are now in phase two, which began this Monday, so yesterday, for our teachers and our students. And that phase includes parent training, making sure our parents understand what their responsibilities and roles are. And we are taking attendance and also now assigning grades. We're in our fourth grading period. And so I'm happy to announce that yesterday, our first day of taking attendance, we had 88% attendance, which is relatively high considering that this time last year we had 92%. So that's where we are in Miami-Dade.
That's awesome, Marie. No doubt you and so many of you who have been ahead of the curve. That's extraordinary. David.
The Cajon Valley School District has 27 schools, about 18,000 students, K through 8. And we are richly diverse, just like the last several districts in terms of languages and language learners, and even socioeconomic. We have about 60% of our students on free and reduced lunch, but about 30% in a very high SES area. So really a tale of two cities. I've seen lots of heroism in our community, from the community, from our teachers, from our parents, especially our school leaders. The first thing we did was make sure that our students were fed, that our students were receiving meals. And we did that through volunteerism. We didn't know who was gonna do it or how we're gonna pay people. We just said, you know what, we need volunteers. And almost 1,000 people came out from the school district to provide meals for our kids. Our kids have been doing a one-to-one learning since 2014 with blended and personalized learning. So they've been familiar with adaptive curriculum, familiar with how to access their own data and monitor their own progress. So a lot of these things that we're doing now are not new to the students, which is helpful for parents because they have a tech, every parent has a tech expert in their house. It's our students. And so we were able to get the technology home, and there are about 5% of students that still are disconnected from the internet because they would access it typically at their school sites or Starbucks or other places. But now that they're confined to their homes, our focus is making sure that they're connected. But our vision for our school behind me is happy kids, healthy relationships on a path to gainful employment. So in addition to modern learning and modern tools, we have a modern curriculum that we built ourselves in the world of work for career development. All of our students start learning to give TED Talks starting in kindergarten, which is really focused on their ideas and their ability to read and write to develop an idea worth spreading, computer science and relationship skills. And it's fascinating that when we talk to parents about what should we be doing during this time, it's relationships, it's connecting with students, so that their well-being is intact, and helping them connect with their peers online. So we've developed customized playlists centrally that we pushed out to all of our teachers, and they're working through them now so they can spend more of their time connecting with students on Zoom or Seesaw or whichever medium they're comfortable, but really connecting with students in real time, focusing on their relationships with their kids.
Great. Tom?
Good morning. My name is Tom Rooney. I'm the superintendent of schools in Lindsay Unified School District. And Lindsay is located in the Central Valley of California. We're a rural school district, pre-K through 12, about 4,000 learners. We have been, over the last decade or so, building a personalized competency-based, learner-centered system, which in many ways has prepared us for this transition and this challenge that we face. Lindsay's population, we are 100% of our children are free and reduced lunch. We have about 56% who come to our doors speaking a language other than English. Over 30% are migrant, and 13% of our children meet the federal definition of homelessness. And so our parent education level is very low. And in a community such as Lindsay, there is a deep reliance upon the school system for many aspects of life, whether that's food, whether that's safety, whether that's connection, and obviously in learning. And so our challenge as the the facility closure or school closure approached, our challenge was to make sure that we would not cut off that lifeline that so many of our families relied upon us for. And in preparation, over the last several years, we created a community Wi-Fi project that was fully implemented a couple of years ago, where every learner and every family has full access to the internet through the district system. Every learner also has their own device that they take home and use. We also have been building a learner management system that's called Empower. We've been using that, and we literally built many thousands of playlists at every single level. And we've been kind of significantly training our team. And so over the years for this anywhere, anytime learning for Lindsay learners. And so when we were approaching school closure, and we closed on March 16th, but as we were approaching that, we were simultaneously ramping up to begin learning in a different way the very next day. And so on March 17th, Lindsay learners went home. And on March 18th, they all showed up to their virtual learning environment with their devices, with their learning facilitators. And obviously the numbers weren't, we didn't have everybody show up on that first day, but over time only increased, and the level of engagement has increased. We also then provided, part of our journey was we provided for 4 days after school closure is we provided an extensive professional learning opportunity that was all virtual for all of our teaching staff to help them through this transition. And to, as you've heard many of several of the panelists say, it's not just about the learning of the content, but it's about reaching out and connecting with our learners and their families and letting them know we are here. And so Lindsay, our motto is the facilities have closed, but the learning has not. All of our services are here for you, whether it's food service, whether it's counseling service, whether it's family outreach, whether it's learning, whatever it is that you need, our system is here for you. And that's kind of the work and what we've been engaged in during this transitional time.
Tom, I love that. I loved your announcement of that school wasn't closing, that Lindsay was just closing its facilities. And boy, how true that is. It's amazing. You know, the New York Times ran an article yesterday highlighting the reality that as schools move online, that many students are still locked out. And, you know, citing that, you know, some teachers have said that they have not been able to connect with half of their students. What are you all finding in your own districts? And what are you doing to connect with the students that, quite frankly, due to special needs, disabilities, at risk, at home situations. How are you managing that at this time? And I'll, why don't we go in the same order? You can remember the order. Susan, we'll start with you, and then Scott, Marie.
David, sure. I would say that probably for us, that's one of our biggest pain points and frustrations, and that's what I hear from staff. I had a conversation with one of my elementary teachers who serves our students with emotional behavioral needs. And she had over 2 weeks been trying daily, repeatedly, to connect with her students and families. And as of last week, midweek, she had only connected with two. And that's not for lack of trying. So this is going to, I think, be an ongoing challenge for those of us in systems where not everyone has the internet connection, which is one thing. We've also had concerns around teachers having concerns around using their own personal cell phones or home phones to reach staff. So we're putting solutions in place for that, for their protection. But I think that connecting with all of our kids will continue to be a priority and continue to be a challenge, because I think it was somebody else mentioned, every family is dealing with their own reality. in what we're facing. And frankly, some, many, and that number will grow as the weeks go on and more people lose their jobs and it's harder to put food on the table. They're just dealing with basic reality. And so initially, I think connecting necessarily with the teacher isn't always top of mind, but that doesn't mean we don't keep trying. And we're really blessed in Highline to have a dedicated staff who won't stop trying. And we'll keep that.
Hey, Scott, can you touch on some of the strategies you guys have put in place to ensure equity and connection to your students?
Yeah, so I think everyone's struggling right now in phase two, now that the devices are deployed, where school districts or school networks have them, what connectivity looks like and how that equity is provided. So we are utilizing our operations teams to begin making, you know, direct phone calls and visits to houses where possible while keeping everyone safe. To be doing check-ins, to advocate for families and or support with advocacy efforts for families, to contact local providers, to make better connections, work with our partner districts and our partner authorizers to have collective, assurance to go after some of these bigger ideas collectively here in the regions that we work in. We are thinking about tech hotspot pickups with food. So doing checkouts with food each day, we are providing that already. And so that's an opportunity for us. As we're reaching out to families, we're noticing that just bandwidth isn't as strong as they want it to be for the devices happening and the devices going in their houses, and so we're supporting them with that. Our IT team has completely flipped to a virtual help desk, and so they're being able to problem solve with teachers and families and students real time by joining computers and or fixing problems remotely. So really proud of that. For students that we're not able to reach, partnering with our school resource officers has been really helpful. Home visits, well-being checks, and making sure that our families are okay, especially those that have disruptive communication outlets that we're not able to reach right now.
So to piggyback on what Scott was saying, so for us, we've done a number of things. The first thing that we did that I think has been very helpful for our families has been partnering with the local media and having them push out information relative to a helpline that we've stood up. That helpline came, was up the day after our school closures, the Monday after our school closures. And we have folks on 30 operators trained on the line. Now they're doing it virtually. Before they were in a conference room together. And they are helping parents work through different scenarios that they're facing. So a lot of parents are calling this helpline, and this is strictly just for distance learning. We have a whole other number for food and basic needs and so on and so forth. We've been able to capture those families that are telling us that they don't have internet access, and we've been working with our providers as well. Comcast has been very generous in opening their Wi-Fi networks after we reached out to them very early on. We also have a project with Sprint called the 1 Million Project, where they've literally given us tens of thousands of Sprint phones that work as hotspots. This has been before closures. This was before anyone could imagine what we were going to be going through. And so we had on hand an additional 1,000 phones that they just sent us, and they were able to work with our attorneys to lift the, because it's for high school students only. That was the caveat. So we've been able to lift that barrier up. So now those phones we're distributing it to all grade configurations, which has been helpful. Additionally, taking attendance, some might see it as, well, you don't want to hold, kids accountable or penalize students, but actually taking attendance has been very insightful for us, because we can see then through our attendance reporting where the pockets of disconnection are, whether they are in our early childhoods, in our pre-K and kindergartners. We were at like 56% attendance on Monday. I mentioned that today was Tuesday, but today is Wednesday because all these days run into each other. But on Monday, we were at like 56% with our little guys. And today, they jumped to the migrant camps alone, we're at 100% attendance. So we've worked with ways that students can report for virtual school, primarily if they have a cognitive disability or if they're really little and they can't remember credentials. So we're using QR codes for those kids. So we're noticing who's coming to school virtually every day better. Also, in our attendance reporting, we're disaggregating by subgroups so we can see if our challenge are our students with disabilities, what exceptionalities are having issues. Whether it is our migrant population or our homeless. We have 6,000 homeless students that we serve in Miami-Dade County Public Schools, and we've been working with the homeless shelters. Some of our shelters for battered women, domestic abuse victims, have had policies in place where they don't have internet access to protect them. And so we're working with internet providers and those entities to kind of make sure that they're secure, but that they have access at the same time. And so those are some of the things that that we've been doing. We continue to learn a lot from the data, and just kind of disaggregating the data provides us with those insights so that we can pivot and be nimble.
Okay, I'm getting a lot of questions flooding in, so I'm gonna shift to those. And I'd love David and Tom to weigh in on a couple, because you all have done such a great job kind of in the precursor of COVID to transition. Some of the questions are, what platforms are you using to coordinate digital personalized learning, to track student progress and learning? Also to hear what organizations and resources that you are using and tools that you are using at this time to drive your planning and implementation. You two could take that. That would be great.
Okay. Tom, you wanna go first?
Go ahead, please.
David, you're on mute. David, you
want to go? I'll just share visually. Are you able to see my screen? These are some of the e-learning playlists of what that looks like. And it's a variety of tools from our modern curriculum, which is our tech presentation literacy. These are some of the adaptive programs that help students monitor their own progress in terms of Lexile growth and gains. iReady has both the math and adaptive ELA component. So these are some of the things that our students are familiar with that they're still accessing. Khan Academy is a new tool that we're introducing for students that want to go further. And we're also having our PE and counselors develop well-being and off-curriculum type experiences. And finally, our World of Work curriculum, which we've been using for 3 years now to help kids develop their strengths, interests, and values around career development. Those are some of the tools.
Phyllis, in Miami, I know that you want Tom. To go to Tom.
Never mind. Yeah, if I go to Tom, that'd be great. Absolutely. And then I'm going to go to another question.
Yeah, I think some of the tools that we're using, I mean, a key element that we have in Lindsay is our learner management system of Empower. And those have literally been, you know, there's thousands of playlists that are learners access. But also the, you heard David mention Seesaw, you heard, you know, Zoom being mentioned. And so those are tools, and Google Classroom as well, Google Meet. We are meeting. It's a variety. It depends on sometimes the age level. It depends on the comfort level of the learning facilitator. Our teachers are learning facilitators, so it depends on their skill set, their comfort level on the various tools. We our regular programs from iReady to Lexia to Reading Plus. Those are programs that we've been using regularly. And what we're finding, interestingly enough, is we're finding that the learner usage in some of the programs that we already have has gone up significantly in the first week or so. And so we had, you know, they have goals that they set. They're responsible for meeting certain, as a learner-centered system, it's about setting goals and driving your own learning. And so now what we're finding is some learners in this new virtual anywhere, anytime learning in Lindsay are actually engaged in learning with the digital content more so than they were before. And so it's kind of a really exciting element of it. I did want to make a comment on the first question, if I could, Phyllis, is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
The first comment about the reaching out to those that are difficult to connect with. And there's three things in Lindsay that have been successful that I think might be useful for people to consider. One is the mindset of the adults. First and foremost, our message was, whatever your job was before, it is still that job. Whether you are an attendant clerk, whether you were a counselor, whether you were in charge of student safety, whatever your role was, now you're just going to need to do it virtually. How are you going to do that virtually? So my charge and challenge for everybody in the system was, look at your job responsibilities and now complete those same responsibilities in a virtual manner. That's one. Number two is the mindset of the learner. So in a learner-centered system in which learners have been responsible for their learning, that have been setting goals, tracking their progress, monitoring their progress, adjusting as needed, celebrating their successes, when you make a shift like this, it really relies now also significantly upon the learner. Now the learners need to rise up even more so than they were doing before. And then one last, and that's what we're seeing in with Lindsay learners is when they've become empowered and they're so invested in their learning that their this new setting actually is a challenge for them. And it wants them to actually, they want to engage even more in some ways. And I think the last one, there was a question about learners with special needs. So a couple of things that we did is we prepared our learners with special needs before they left. We had about a 1 or 2 day closure is coming sort of thing. And so they really prepared learners. And I think more importantly than any other learner, I would say this, is we've enrolled the parents of those learners, one. And the other part that we've done is that all of our learners have their device and the devices all have a camera. So they literally can see their learning facilitator. In Lindsay, it's called an ed specialist. And to see that person that is so important to you and to see their face and to connect with them, I would say for our learners with special needs, that's been the most important part. We have conducted IEPs virtually. We've done all of these things. The system, the services continue. But really connecting and seeing our learning facilitators has been important.
Thank you, Tom. Marie, do you want to share a few? It sounded like you had a few tools you wanted to share with the group, and then I wanted to move to the next question.
Sure. Thank you, Phyllis. No, I just wanted to mention, we don't have a learning management system in Miami-Dade. We're a Microsoft Office, rather, 365 district. And so we had organically about 18,000 users that were using Microsoft Teams when we first started trying to make some very quick decisions. And so because we had a pretty critical mass of users already on there and it was free and all students had licensing, we decided to use Microsoft Teams as our platform of choice. Our teachers still have autonomy. We didn't want to disrupt the tools that they already were using. We've been doing a lot of professional development for many years, and so we didn't want to undo that, tools that parents and students and teachers were accustomed to, but definitely a lot of support and training. We had 3 days of training to get them to stand up Microsoft Teams as the preferred platform without disrupting those other tools that they are using. And then lastly, again, like my colleagues mentioned, a lot of that digital content that we all have in common, whether it's curriculum associates, Khan, Achieve 3000, Reading Plus, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What we did is we curated that, and you can see a little bit more about that for those that are interested in that level of detail at icp.dadeschools.net.
Great, thank you. I got a question. Are you providing some structured learning online that was in the classroom with schedule, assignments, and grading? Or is it just giving them resources so they can access online? And if it's the former, can you share your strategies with the rest of the country? And Scott, I know, because I wrote about you last week and the structured school day online that you have with your students. Can you share a day in the life at Distinctive Schools?
Yeah, so we're really proud of the way our school leaders and teachers have come together to design with and not for. It's been one of our core design anchors since we started the innovation work. And so our instructional coaches and our teachers have come together to really help design what a day in the life should look like. I think for the past 3 weeks, it was providing resources, making sure there were touch points, reaching out to families and kids as much as possible, making sure there was food, making sure there was tech. And now we really feel like phase two has a strong foundation for us to launch into. So our teachers have created daily schedules. We're asking our teachers to have 3 to 5 hours of student contact time a day. That can range from office hours to class morning meetings to specific check-ins. We've got like pretty cool guided reading groups happening in small groups in different grade levels. We use Summit Learning Platform in 6th through 8th grade. That's been really helpful in making sure that we have a platform for students asking and advocating for their time with teachers for office hours. hour so that they can review an assessment that they took. We're being really thoughtful about assessment and obviously following all of our state guidance on what we can and can't do. Student advocated assessments have been priority, and giving feedback has definitely been a priority. We're standards-based and competency-based, so that's been really helpful in the way that we think about closing third quarter. If we do return, we'll hopefully have an option for students to make progress towards those grade-level standards in the last month to 2 months. If that does not happen, we'll be able to really plan for the summer and for the fall. We've got first graders saying, like, hey, can I have office hours with you today, and can you send me a calendar invite so I know my Zoom link that I can join? That's been really helpful. Our parents are finding that balance with us and making sure that we're not overwhelming them, but we're also giving them structure. The feedback was, one child of mine is on at 7:45 a.m. with their teacher, but my other kids aren't on until 3 p.m. And so giving teachers some of the boundaries and structures of a day in the life has been really helpful, as well as being able to give kids some more structure to what teachers need. Teachers' emotions are obviously very high right now. They're balancing a lot. They have their own family, their own kids, their own personal things happening at home. And so we're also trying to juggle and balance that. Culture is at the core of everything that we do. And so providing the structure has been well received. The last thing I'll say is, on Fridays, we are doing self-directed learning Fridays so that teachers can have a full day of collaboration and planning time for the upcoming week. So teachers are expected to give students a really strong structure for their day on Friday. And then our school leaders, who are amazing, are leading collaboration sessions all day Friday. Co-teachers, special ed, EL teachers, being able to guide the next week.
That's terrific, Scott. And I know you've got some more flexibility because you run a charter management organization. I'd love to hear Susan, Marie, some of the district leaders talk about how you're doing this within a public district construct. How much time are teachers expected to spend during the day? And is it approximately the same time they spend during normal school days, or even more now, is the next question that's come in.
Go ahead, Sue.
Yeah, just go ahead, Marie.
No, I want you to go ahead.
So I think it's progressed with each week. So originally, it was just letting people sort of adjust to what was our new reality and our new way of working and living. Ongoing conversations with our teachers union, because many of our union leadership see this as a change in working conditions that needs to be bargained. And so having those conversations, but also really trying to create a team approach that we really can't be bound by some of the constraints of traditional collective bargaining agreements right now. It won't allow our teachers and our families and kids to have the flexibility they need. So what we've tried to do along with our union is to say, okay, a teacher isn't going to be delivering instruction for 6 hours a day like they would normally. So we've grouped it from K-2 to 3-5 to 6-12, what our expectations are for the amount of time or number of assignments that teachers are giving in a week. And then also delineating what the expectations are for how they're using their collaboration time, the degree to which principals can direct their time. And this is all ongoing right now in conversations with our union.
So in Miami-Dade, similar to Susan, we've had several iterations of this. We had a letter of understanding with the union very quickly at the very beginning, when we thought it was a 2 to 3 week closure period. And then as we noticed that this was going to take a lot longer, then we have renegotiated a second LOU that became effective this Monday, this week, which brought in the attendance, which brought in the grading, one grade per subject per week for every child. Our biggest thing right now is really balancing the assigning of assignments to students with direct instruction. And so there was a lot of questions in our first 2 weeks, parents, we started looking at our social media feeds, and we started noticing right away some trends, and also the calls that were coming into the helpline were very indicative of where we needed to provide more structure. And that was around, how long is this school day? Is my kid supposed to have classwork and homework? Is he supposed to be in front of a computer from the moment the bell rings at the beginning of his day till dismissal? So that was all part of ICP 2.0, phase two. And we did create some good frameworks like Scott mentioned around, and Susan, around in a K-1 grade grouping. This is about right, we think, and it was around 2 hours. We did it by subject. That's all in our ICP. They're called instructional continuity pacing guides, and within them we have time on task by grade level, by subject. Of course, it's recommended, but it's giving the teachers those guardrails, if you will, that they should be operating in. In addition to that, from the very beginning, from the first day of closures, we did negotiate office hours. They are 3 hours a day of direct interfacing with students. That looks a little different when you're looking at an elementary classroom as opposed to a high school teacher who might have 150, 180 kids total. A lot of our high schools are still running calendars of A day, B day, which what that does is essentially cuts the amount of students that a teacher is interfacing with on any given day in half, and also the work that the students are doing. So having communicating out to the external customers as well, our parents, that this is the expectation, because there was a lot of questions around that. Your child should be spending X number of time a day in their virtual school. You should be connecting with a teacher on a daily or other day, each and every other day during their office hours. That has been very, very helpful as well.
Great. Marie, we're down to our last 5 minutes, and I do want to spend just a little time, and this is connected to a question that's come in around how you're thinking about the future of education. What's education going to look like going forward? And I know David and Tom spent a lot of time thinking about this. They planned for this moment, and I'd love them to address that real quick.
Tom, you want to go first this time? Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I think one of the first stakeholder groups we reached out to are our parents. So we met virtually with all the PTA presidents from our 27 schools, with our school board president and our cabinet. And first we just asked how they're doing and checked in. And the first 30 minutes was almost like therapy, just people sharing their experiences and their feelings. But when we asked about academic program, the resounding themes were, we want flexibility. We want personal connection with our kids, human relationship, and we want guidance. We want guidance, not just for our students, but for our parents at home. We need help in how to make sure our students are doing the best they can. That theme was with the teachers union and classified union as well, in terms of we want flexibility in our work, we want personal care, and we want to be connected with our colleagues. So it's interesting how we're repurposing people to feel interest in this time of closure. So a lot of our nutrition workers, our transportation workers, people that typically would do specific tasks, are signing up to help students with their IEP goals online, mm-hmm. or read to kindergarten classes, to expand the number of people that we can connect with our families and our kids. And it's really been interesting to see where people go when given the option and flexibility to do their work. And we focused on outcomes rather than time. So to have a kid manage 6 different teachers and 6 different courseworks, and then a parent have to navigate that at home is unrealistic. But we've put together these playlists and said progress and growth are the most important thing, and staying connected with these kids to make sure that they have someone guiding them by their side. And so when you think about the future of education, flexibility, outcomes over time, a lot of the restrictions that the federal and state government have taken away probably shouldn't be put back when we go back to school. And that's a conversation that we'll have with our legislators, right?
Whoa, now you're getting good. Now you're getting to the good stuff, right? We're at the end. How do you see a change then? This is, everybody's cheering for you, by the way. Tom, you have something to add there?
Different.
Thanks, David, and others. I think what I would say as far as like with the future conditions, that this crisis has changed what's possible, and it's actually moved people into a space that many did not think was possible. And now you hear it right here on the panel and all throughout the country. You're hearing people navigate this element of learning that they didn't think was possible for everybody. And so it will forever change what's possible. I would add a couple of things though with regard, it's not gonna be so much about, at least in my opinion, it's not going to be so much about the educational systems that exist. I think the shift is going to be around the concept of learning. And how does learning happen, and where does learning happen? And I think it's also, this crisis has brought about a much deeper appreciation for those who are educators. It's brought about a different mindset on the work that it is, on the commitment that it takes. When you have these learning facilitators and counselors and principals and everybody who are fully engaged in a different way, and they're not giving up on their learners no matter what. I think that says something to the community, that says something to our regions, to our states, and to our nation about the critical element of public education for America's children. And then, so what I think an element of this is there will be a greater engagement from the community. What role does the community play in ensuring children are educated? It's not just the responsibility of the school system, but it's also the responsibility of the parents and of the broader community. And one of the challenges we have now is we have many, many of our learners who are in extensive internships. How do we continue those? The community engagement in the future will be different. And I was one of an author of a
Tom.
Go ahead.
Tom, I'm so sorry to cut you off, but they're gonna kick us out of here. That, what a great comment to end on. And I think you just, honestly, the future of education is in your hands. We're gonna get there. So you all, please give everyone a warm round of applause. Yay, you guys are amazing. And keep up the extraordinary work. You guys are on the front lines, and with all the gratitude in the world, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks everyone. And with that, I'll kind of just weigh in here and thank you again. We know that you're out there on the front lines and you're adapting and critically serving students, parents, and the community in these unprecedented times. So thank you again. So before we bring in Tom van der Ark to lead a conversation with EdTech leaders, just a quick reminder that if you're on, that you are on channel 2, if you miss any part of the panel, we'll have it up on the GSV Ventures website shortly, and you will be receiving an email as well with highlights on all 3 channels. There's still other programming happening on channels 1 and 3. We'll put the link below just in case you don't know how to get there. And then after the conclusion of the next panel, we're going to have what we're referring to as kind of a special post-summit session with Dr. Mark Brackett, who is Director of Yale's Center for Emotional Intelligence on coping during COVID. If you haven't seen or read Mark before, he's fantastic. So make sure to check it out. And with that, I will hand it over to Tom van der Ark, who I see on the screen, for the next panel. Take it away, Tom.
Thanks, Michael. Good morning, everybody, and thanks to Phyllis Lockett for a terrific panel with a great group of superintendents. You have a bunch of my favorites. We've talked to and featured a couple of them recently, and they're doing extraordinary things to keep learning going during the pandemic. We have a great panel on ed tech and getting through. I'm gonna ask each of the panelists to quickly introduce themselves and do 2 things. Describe what their app did a month ago and how that has changed since most of America's schools have closed. So I want to start with Dan Carroll, CEO of Clever. Dan, describe what Clever did a month ago and how has that changed in the last month?
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for the introduction and excited to be on this panel. So what Clever does, we are the single sign-on portal for schools. So we allow schools to deploy new ed tech software and resources with a click, and then teachers, students, and staff can go to one place and with one username and password get access to all the programs, tools, and resources that they need. That's what we were doing a month ago, and that's what we're doing today. Just a lot more of it today than we would expect. Usually this is a pretty slow time of the year as folks get ready for testing, and this has actually turned into our busiest time of the year.
What's happened to the number of sign-ons that you're seeing? Is it's actually increased?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting and maybe a little bit tragic. So If we kind of are using the week of March 1st as sort of our baseline. That was kind of the normal before schools really started to close. And what we saw is for the first couple of weeks after March 1st, usage really dipped during kind of the transition and chaos and even, you know, also some spring break. Since then, teacher activity on Clever is now significantly above normal, above that baseline. It's up about 20%, but student activity is still down compared to March 1st, compared to the sort of preschool closure time. It's down about 25%. And, you know, that I think highlights some of the equity issues and challenges that some of the superintendents spoke to on the panel before. And of course, we're doing everything we can to support schools and districts in making sure every student has access and is learning at home. But what we're seeing from the 15 or 16 million users who use Clever every month is right now student access is down compared to when schools were open.
Interesting. Hey, Brian Gray from the Remind. Remind us of what functionality you offer schools and how are use patterns different now?
Sure. Thanks, Tom, for moderating this. So a month ago, we were the most widely used communication platform in education. And I would say a month later, we're even more widely used as a communication platform in education. You know, I listened in on Phyllis's conversation before this with a lot of the educators and heard the word connections quite a bit. And that's what we do. So through communication, through two-way communication, we've been both humbled and inspired by the increase in the usage of Remind over these last 30 days. Give you some numbers, 100 million messages per day are being sent through the platform. Wow. More than 30 million attachments are being included in those messages. So we're seeing different usage patterns. Obviously everybody's at home, learning from home. And so Remind's now being used throughout the day part as really a learning platform and a channel through which all of this important learning content is flowing. And now we're, you know, well north of 2 million teachers, 30 million students and parents. So pretty massive usage. And a real shout goes out to our engineering team and our support teams. They've just done Herculean efforts over the time. Nobody could plan for this. We have really built our platform over the last several years to continue to scale like this. And we've made it through and really feel like we're supporting the education system in a pretty meaningful way. And our partners, Amazon and Twilio, also should be highlighted and appreciated in supporting us on behalf of teachers, students, parents, and administrators.
Now, Brian, it's interesting to think about if this had happened 10 years ago, right, how different it was. We were just at the very beginning of people going one-to-one and really being connected to school. And it's just great to have apps like yours in place that make a horrible situation like this a little more tolerable, right, where you can at least stay in touch with parents and kids.
Yeah, and you mentioned 10 years ago. I mean, it was literally 9 years ago Remind started. And Brett and David Kopp, who started the company, the first teacher sent out a text message 9 years ago. And here we are really realizing the value of us becoming, you know, really what we're talking about a lot internally is an accessible virtual learning platform. Allowing everybody to stay connected. I mentioned the numbers. The important thing to remember is we also support SMS and text messaging. Yeah. So we get into the narrative around access and we get into the notion that not everybody has a device, not everybody has a smartphone, not everybody can be on Wi-Fi or even robust data plans. Remind levels the playing field and has really been key to making sure everybody stays connected. Yep. And not just the students, but the parents, right? I'm sitting in an office and right outside, I've got a high school junior and a college student who's home and they're both doing remote learning. And my visibility into what they're doing is really pretty limited. And we help with that because we help send out that same information, those same updates to the parents so they know what learning progress their son or daughter is going through in this time.
That's great. Amanda Duramaral from Fiveable, you're the place where AP kids go to study, right?
That's it. Yeah. So
what's happened in the last month?
Well, we've always been like an after school space for students. Right. And so, you know, we have live streams, live trivia, other types of resources specifically for AP students. And so a month ago it was kids coming after school to get like support, you know, beyond what they were doing in the classroom. And since then it's Now there is no after school, right? There's just at home. And so now we've just been just really, like everyone's talking about, scaling with the demand. There was a question around whether APs would still happen, and College Board has adapted the exam this year to be online and shorter. Right. And so we've just seen a really massive uptick in students and teachers that are looking for AP specific resources, especially like ways that they can connect. I think what a lot of students are experiencing right now are some teachers are totally plugged in and are feeling comfortable using technology at home, right, while others are not. And so there's a huge gap in terms of what types of support students are receiving. And so that's something that we've been able to really support with our live streams, especially around AP. So we've just been just helping a lot of kids just, you know, come in and ask questions. And part of it too is just kind of calming them down and being that sort of, you know, social emotional support, even beyond just rote memorization or anything. It's not, you know, the test is one thing, but it's also just like, we're all dealing with so much stress, and the kids are too. Right. So we've just been trying to have fun with them.
Amanda, you work primarily with upper division kids. So that is representative of a struggle that the last panel talked a little bit about, is just making sure that seniors stay on track to graduate, taking care of juniors and seniors, and making sure that they're moving on with their post-secondary plan. So I'm sure you're responding to a lot of those questions, and that's such a dynamic situation. The guidance that's coming out from states is different in almost every circumstance. So it's a bit of a free-for-all. You guys must be scrambling to make sure that you're aware of what's happening in every state.
Yeah, I think the students are just, you know, part of what is so stressful right now is the unknown. That's for students, that's for teachers, that's for everybody. And I think with kids, they've been, you know, if you look at a senior or junior right now, they've been, you know, doing all the things they were supposed to do. They were taking SATs or signed up to take APs, signed up to do all types of different extracurriculars. And now that everything has changed overnight, they're seeing even colleges change their, right, their plans, right? Like whether or not like SATs are even going to be looked at. And so some students are sort of just like, how is this going to work? How will I match up against other students I'm applying against? That piece of it is very stressful for them. So they're just really trying to do as much as they can right now.
Yeah, I'm curious, Amanda, do you see more AP learning going online after this, or will it go more blended and more online as far as AP learning goes?
Yeah, I mean, I think like what we're able to do with AP online is really give more students access, right? Like not every school can teach every AP subject. And so how can we give students more access to learn the subjects that they want, to be able to take the exams that they want? And I think, you know, we've already started to see that shift in the last, you know, decade, as we've been talking about, with students using YouTube or even Wikipedia to study online. But with live streams, with teachers like implementing all these different features, it's just becoming more a regular part of how teachers are, you know, providing instruction.
That's great. I'm sure a lot of kids are happy you're there. Adrienne Graham, founder, CEO of Seesaw Learning. You're another great resource that connects learners and teachers and families. Tell us a little more about the benefits that you've brought to learning and how that's changed in the last month.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. A month ago, I think one of the main ways Seesaw was used is as a tool that lets elementary school students record and reflect on what they're learning,
right,
and then give parents a window into the classroom so that that learning can be reinforced at home. And as you might imagine, that same dynamic is at play now, but it's shifted. It's, you know, right, now the learning's happening at home, and it may be giving the teacher a window into what's going on at home. But I mean, we've seen just enormous growth, not just in terms of new users, but in terms of daily use. You know, Seesaw used to be used once or twice a week in the classroom, and now we see it being used multiple times a day as, you know, teachers try to find a way to adapt to this new world. One of the things that we've been most excited about is that, you know, this whole change has been so disruptive to everyone's life and everyone's routine. And rather than looking at that purely from a negative perspective, I think it also opens up a possibility of new learning routines opening up at home.
Right.
That's where we've seen some of the, you know, biggest success with Seesaw around saying, hey, you know, the home is a great environment for learning, but it needs to happen in a different way than in the classroom. How do you practice reading as a family together every day and just make that part of your new routine? Or how do you cook together as a family and talk about math and fractions as part of that? Right. And then when that can be recorded and shared back with the teacher, it creates all kinds of new opportunities for learning in a much more real context than the classroom can offer.
So a quick story, Adrian. I wrote a book a year ago called The Power of Place, and it came out the day that the WHO declared COVID a pandemic. So the book's really about community as classroom and the power that creates. And we've seen such cool uses of Seesaw learning in place-based learning in the past, and we've seen a big increase in that in the last month. Or kids are reflecting on learning at home, or if they're able to go outside, they're making Seesaw videos about that and sort of sharing. And it really has created this new and unexpected sort of community as classroom experience in part to the great functionality of Seesaw learning.
No, that's very cool. Thanks for sharing that.
It's been fun to see. Max Tuckman, the founder and CEO of Caribou Learning. How are young people using Caribou a month ago, and how's that changed?
Yeah, so we've always been focused on the babies. I'm a former 12th grade teacher, and it was very clear to me that if we do not focus on early childhood literacy, we all lose. All of us on the panel, in the audience, all the kids, we all lose. And so Caribou allows you to read together in a video call. So we are content plus video call, which up until a month ago was a nice to have, and right. is crucial. Our numbers, we went free for COVID-19 on March 14th and literally 10x'd all of our numbers, not only wow. downloads across the globe, number of users that signed up, usage, number of minutes making video calls. A month ago, we were really focused on grandmas reading with their grandkids. And grandmas,
don't forget grandpas.
Grandpas,
yes, too. Thank you. No, we love it. It's what a gift to be able to read with your kids when you can't see them.
Exactly. And before COVID-19, right, it was, hey, I'm not going to see the kids because we just finished traveling, or we're not going to travel for a little while. And so I still want to make sure that they're getting literacy. Again, we're really focused on 0 to 7. So we're focused on before school even happens, making sure that the parent and the grandparent can feel like they're being the child's first teacher and feeling confident about that. We have thousands of titles in 8 different languages, and we're seeing that also is a game changer for the families across the globe that are dealing with COVID-19. What we also found when COVID-19 hit is that kids now are doing virtual play dates with their friends. So that was another wow. use case, yeah, that we hadn't really cool. anticipated, because kids see their friends all the time. Right. They do activities.
Right. Totally, and they want to connect. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're having little virtual play dates. And one other thing that we've seen recently, which I think is really exciting, is this invent of micro babysitting. So for any parents who are on this this channel, like you, we know you need a break, and trying to give you a break on FaceTime like just doesn't work, right? Kids are running around, they're bored. But with Caribou, they have activities to do, books to read, games to play. We even have a cooking section now, mindfulness, art walks, things that kids can do together. And we are free and unlimited for COVID-19. So anyone, please, who's in the audience, please go download Caribou, use it with your family. We really hope that it's helping kids right now during this crisis where they just don't understand what's happening.
No, it's an awesome app. Every grandparent ought to get it. So I appreciate some of the cool new use cases that you highlighted and the new resources that you put up. I want to give other folks a chance to highlight some of the cool resources that you've put up. One of the fun things in getting ready for the panel was just checking out each of your sites, and your teams have done a great job scrambling to add some resources. I'll start with Dan. What have you guys added in terms of resources?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. So I just posted into the chat our Learning at Home page, which is where we've aggregated all the things that we're doing to support that transition from learning at school to learning at home. A couple of things that I want to highlight that have been just incredibly helpful for schools. Right as things were beginning to hit, we reached out to Zoom and said, hey, you know, there's going to be a big spike in educator need for video conferencing, but maybe we could do something together to make it really easy. And they were incredibly receptive, and we built a very, very, very quick but very effective partnership that allowed any district using Clever to sign up with Zoom and get kind of a bit, you know, and all the free trial restrictions lifted for all their teachers just with a couple clicks. And so 2,000 districts have done that, signed up for that Clever and Zoom partnership. And many of them tell us it's been a huge part of their strategy for serving both whole classrooms, but also students with special needs and English language learners, folks like that. We've also been scrambling to support parents in helping their kids log in, work at home. You know, it's amazing how many parents we at the beginning of the crisis were reaching out to us and saying, gosh, you know, my school wants my kids to go online and do all this great learning, but I don't even know how to log them in. Yeah. And so what we've been doing is we've been taking all the tech resources and tools that we've built for teachers to support kids in the classroom and making them available for parents. Things like the Clever badge that allows a kid to log in with just by holding their badge up to a webcam, or making that something that parents can access and print out and support their kids with. And so those are just a couple of the ways. Maybe the one last thing I'd like to mention is we've been doing town halls. Every cool. Friday, we've been gathering district administrators and you know, having a few as panelists, but just having a really lively Q&A. And of course, there's been a lot of technical tips and tricks that have been shared. Yeah. But I think the thing that's been most powerful about those town halls is the sense of community and collaboration.
Right.
People go in and they feel like they're alone and they're on an island and that their district's the only one thinking about these kinds of challenges. And they get together and they realize, wow, like the whole country, if not the whole world, is going through this. And just that sense of, you know, we're all, you know, fighting the same fight together has just been incredibly powerful and moving.
No, I appreciate that. In some ways, there is this new mutuality that a lot of people are experiencing in sort of layers of community. So I appreciate that. Brian, thanks for adding some resources to the chat. What give us a couple headlines from the...
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Remind kind of sits right in the hub of all the stakeholders, right? Students, teachers, parents, and administrators. So let me kind of hit a couple of those or all of those. So on the administrator side, we were doing a lot of work, and then this went right through this period to really shore up rostering and tools for administrators. We've got a lot of folks, a lot of districts and schools that are coming onto our enterprise plan. In fact, Tom, I know you're up in Washington. So Federal Way, Everett, Auburn, Yakima, Olympia, almost 30 districts now in the state of Washington have come onto our platform as customers and partners, which is exciting. And so that rostering of which Clever is one of our partners that helps us with that makes it easy to get Remind out to entire communities very simply and very easily. So that's been important work. On the teacher side, really firming up and hardening and making sure everybody understands everything we do for teachers. So that starts with the two-way communication. In addition to that, voice calling. So teachers now can use the app and make voice calls and reach out to students, counselors. Amanda used the example. You talked about juniors and seniors being able to reach out to those kids right now and have a conversation with them. Integrations with Google Classroom, Google Docs, Microsoft OneNote, Flipgrid, LMSs like Canvas and Schoology make it really easy for teachers to go from Remind, grab the learning content, the curriculum, the lesson plans right from those services, and then use Remind as the communication and distribution channel. And then importantly, from an accessibility standpoint, translation features. So continually doing work to make it easy to translate messages. Right now, you can do that in more than 80 languages on Remind. And that's critical. And then longer term, video conferencing integration, virtual whiteboarding, both with third parties like Zoom, Google Hangouts, Microsoft, but also thinking about how do we instrument that into Remind so it meets the needs of administrators. We saw that, you know, Zoom is probably being looked at a little differently now by district administrators, and we've always kind of built for that that audience, and we'll think about video in the same way.
That's cool. Adrian, you've added some new resources to Seesaw. You want to give us some highlights of that?
Yeah, I'll share two links. One is we've added a lot of new PD just to help teachers get set up in this new environment. And then the other thing, which I think is what we're really most excited about, is just the way in which our whole community has rallied around this. You know, we really feel like community is one of the core parts of Seesaw, and we have this amazing activity library that's community driven. I'll share that out now. But what we're really seeing is the way in which teachers themselves have been adapting to the situation using Seesaw as a platform, but saying, okay, the way we use it in the classroom isn't really going to work as well as it does in the classroom at home. So how can we adapt that? And learning from each other and riffing off of each other's ideas about how to take the lessons that need to get taught in this time, but try to adapt it for the home environment.
Yeah, that's great. Amanda, you added some resources to the chat as well. Tell us what we'll find there.
Yeah, so we've done a bunch of things. We had our teachers put together study plans for the 17 AP exams that we support right now. And so essentially what we did is we organized just like really clearly, if you're home, you're, you know, you've got about 4 or 5 weeks to study, here are the exact things that you can do to follow that. And that's something that parents could follow, that teachers could follow, that students on their own could also follow if they're self-studying. So that's the link that I dropped there. The other things that we've done are just adding a lot more resources. We've added a lot more live streams, especially like during the school day, just even like open Q&As or having past students that have earned fives before pull up a Google Doc live and write practice prompts live, just so that students can see what that will look like, because the exams this year are completely essay based. So they have like 45 minutes to write one essay. And so we're giving kids as many practice prompts as we can. We've even been posting practice prompts on our community forums, and students and teachers are actually like going in and writing responses and then grading each other's responses, which is really cool.
That's great.
But I think mostly it's like the place that we've just supported the most is just really just trying to add more supports. Like, you know, every time we get a message, every time we get an email, just checking in. I've been just calling teachers left and right, just trying to brainstorm with them, figuring out how we can be helpful. You know, in the past, like, all of our resources have been useful for students. We've had high pass rates on just for kids that use Fiveable. And so we're just trying to get that in the hands as many as we can. So we've made our videos downloadable, for example, so that if you don't have a good Wi-Fi connection, you could download it and then watch it later. So that's something that we were able to kind of churn out pretty quickly. And so just like as mentioned, it's like our dev and customer support teams are just like rock stars right now, just absolutely crushing it.
That's so Frank Catalano asked a question. He said, when this crisis is over, what will permanently change your assumptions about parents or families can or will use your product? I'll ask a slightly different question. You can respond to either one. Some of you listened to David Miyashiro and Tom Rooney in the last session, really two of America's best superintendents, talking sort of enthusiastically about the new capabilities that teachers are building, that they're building as leaders, and that systems are building. And they're beginning to see a different future because of the capabilities that are being built now. So would love everybody's take. I'm going to start with Max. You can start and just talk broadly about little kids and how they're interacting in their learning. But then we'll shift to K-12. And you can talk either specific to Frank's question about how you see your product being used differently, or more broadly, what some of the potential positive benefits that will come from the new capabilities that are being developed. So Max, you've already mentioned that you've seen the pivot in usage and some of this peer-to-peer use. Are there other ways that you see different and better application of your product in the future?
I mean, we were so lucky that we had already built a product that brought people together virtually to feel as if they were in the same room, right? Like we could have never expected that a global pandemic would really truly force everybody to stay at home and not be together in the same room. And so for us, like it's been a usage question. It's just been, how do we continue to support all the usage? I mean, people are using Caribu so much more. The age range has kind of grown. The activities that kids want to do with grandma now are a little bit different. Before it was, we want to read all day. We want to read the same book. We want to draw pictures together. We want to color in a Sesame Street worksheet. And now it's, okay, we did all that. Like, let's do something else. Let's cook together, right? Passover is today. We have a bunch of Passover recipes. We have Easter activities for kids to do together. And again, it's educational. And I think that's another thing that we also, it's so tough now in the pandemic, right? Is kids are spending the entire day in whatever type of school they're being given. And they want to do something fun afterwards, but we also want to make sure that screen time is educational and that it's quality screen time and that they're doing it with a trusted adult, right? So again, back to the point of it's with a parent, a guardian, a mentor, a family member, a babysitter, someone that is making sure that that time is being well spent. And I think what's really encouraging is, again, just seeing how many people are realizing like, hey, this is our new normal. We want to do activities together. We want to do educational things together. We want to read bedtime stories. We want to continue making sure that kids are hearing 30,000 unique words and getting 20 minutes of reading a day. And here's this opportunity to be able to do it together in a video call.
That's great. Dan, what do you see? What new capabilities are being built, either a clever or more broadly in education that you think could be a benefit?
Yeah, Tom, I'm going to take a broader perspective here. And I'd say that this is a little bit of what I see happening and a little bit of what I hope happens. Yeah. The first thing, and I think this is more than a hope, I think this is a must, is that I think this crisis has made it clear that having a device that's capable of learning an internet connection at home isn't a nice to have, it's a right. And I think that we heard the superintendents talking about partnering and doing amazing work to make sure every student in their districts had a device. I think that's something that we're going to have to get together as a country and just decide this must happen. Every student, and really, I mean, every individual needs to have that capability of learning at home. And I think that
you're super right about this underscoring inequity in America. I guess I have to admit, I thought a month ago we were farther along. I thought we were getting close to one-to-one and that a lot of folks had shifted to a take-home device. And it turns out we weren't too far from one-to-one, but there weren't a lot of take-home programs, and Wi-Fi still sucks or isn't available for a lot of families. So big national lesson learned on that. And I think you're right. We're going to see a broad public push for better access, for treating broadband as much more like a utility.
Yeah. And I think it'll take government effort. It'll take nonprofit effort. You know, I want to see the education superhighway of at-home access. And it'll take private partnerships as well to make this happen.
No question.
And I think that
fun to watch school districts and cities try to get creative to do what they can quickly, putting Wi-Fi in school buses and distributing hotspots.
I agree, but it needs to be simpler than that. It needs to be as simple as every home has great Wi-Fi,
period.
And I think as we have that, and I think we'll get there. I think we'll get there fast. I think COVID has shown us that we're able to move faster than we ever believed we could.
Yes.
And so as we get there, I think what we'll see is schools realize that they can really rethink blended and where activities take place, whether things need to be in the classroom or need to be at home, in a much better way. I think this is an early lesson from the crisis, but I think some of the ed tech tools that we've really believed need to be used in the classroom might actually be really great used at home as practice. And that might mean that the teachers, the kinds of things that teachers are great with, maybe there's a little bit less of the practice at school and more of the practice at home with digital tools. And the teachers can then get deeper and understand the why and have the discussions and do that higher level thinking that we know that they're so good at. So the shift that I see happening, I think Clever will support this, is more at-home practice with more access as being one of the long-term impacts of COVID.
And just let me jump to Adrian, because Adrian's already talked a little bit about that You know, Seesaw may have been contemplated as an at school, but it certainly has shifted usage. And I'm sure you'd echo Dan's sentiment of these tools that are now going to exist much more at home, at school, in the community. Do you see more of that happening post-pandemic, Adrian?
Absolutely. In fact, last summer, we did a pilot that was all around using Seesaw in a home learning context to help reduce the sort of summer slump that can happen. And we learned so much in that process about how much demand there is to reinforce learning at home and to learn in new ways at home. And I think the thing that, to me, that's so fundamental about learning is that kids learn when they know someone who cares about them is on the other end of whatever they're learning. And so often the experience a kid has is they do some work. If they're really lucky, it gets sent home and put on the fridge. More often than not, it gets put in a box, never to be seen again, or maybe even thrown out. And that process repeats week after week. And I don't know about you, but if, you know, my boss threw away the work I did every week and said, really excited to see you on Monday, I wouldn't be very motivated. Yeah. And I think what we found with Seesaw is that by connecting students with a really authentic audience, the students were intrinsically more motivated to do better work, to be engaged in the work that they're doing. And that's true whether you're in the home or in the classroom. So what I'm most excited about with this new situation is just that I think it opens up people's minds to try new things, to experiment more in a way that was really hard in some cases to imagine before this happened.
Yeah, that's great. Brian, what do you think is going to be different post-pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, we believe very strongly that learning is really about relationships, and that's where the magic happens. And you know, you start with the triangle that you've kind of hit on: students, teachers, and parents. But through communication, and this is the vision we've had for building Remind. I think what's happening now is we're bringing in a lot of what we thought we might get to in 12 or 24 months to right now, and that's super exciting. But the relationships that go student, teacher, parent, counselor, coach, the person running my robotics club, like all of these people in support of the learning journey that a student has. And we really can get to a point where it's learning anywhere, anytime, through any means, and making it accessible. And again, we're already highly accessible because we support SMS and text messaging and our app, and you don't need broadband at home to stay connected. And so it's an unfortunate backdrop, but we have turned it very much into, this is a massive opportunity for education and this systemic shift that we are in the midst of. Right. We are just very excited to play a huge and important role in building these relationships, fostering these relationships, and then letting all these other great learning services flow through Remind. Like I said earlier, like we're seeing so much flowing through Remind right now because of the different use patterns, and it couldn't be more exciting.
We have a question from Ankita. She talked about feature rollout timelines and how those have changed, and whether you had some unexpected insights. I mean, Max talked about her volume going 10x. I'm sure that was a big surprise to your back end folks, right?
They're probably still scrambling. But like everyone else on this, panel, like I just think our engineering teams have gone above and beyond and shown how amazing they are. And what's also really great to see is how a lot of the technology that we use can scale so quickly, right? We didn't have a break the internet situation, even though we grew so massively so quickly.
No, it's been fun to watch our friends at Zoom do that sort of 200x. It's been extraordinary to watch that. Amanda,
Can I speak to that last question?
Yeah, please.
So I think like with what we're seeing is pretty fascinating, because with high school students, there's such a drive for them to support each other. And so, you know, like that's always been there. We've always seen the kids wanting to stream to each other. And this generation is very connected. They're used to that types of technologies. But when we think about like younger kids now having Zoom play dates, you know, getting familiar with live chat, it makes me excited, because I think about then those students in 10 years and what they're going to be like on on platforms like Fiveable where they can help each other, right? Like it's not, I think like there's so much on teachers, you know, I was a teacher and I see what my former colleagues are going through and what our, the teachers we work with are going through. And it's a lot for a teacher to balance, especially like being comfortable with the technology. But I think because we're seeing students at home and getting more familiar with it, they're truly stepping up in ways that it just like blows my mind every single day, just how much they're putting into just creating supports, reaching out to fellow students, finding ways to help their classmates that can't access the internet, making sure that their teachers are supported, teaching their teachers how to use the technologies. So just shout out to the students that are just.
Yeah, awesome. And I want to underscore that, Amanda. Great comment from Tom Rooney, the Lindsay superintendent. He says the bigger issue that needs to be considered is creating systems that build and ensure learner empowerment, learner ownership. Tom and I did a podcast on this last week. What they've done in Lindsay is they've really given learners ownership. They've made their outcomes really transparent. They have kids do goal setting every day. So kids really own their own learning. And it also helps them be really collaborative, Amanda, in the way that you were describing. So I do think we're going to see, when we go back to school, a greater sense of learner agency and a desire to have more control over their own learning, to learn from more sources and to bring that back to school and to do it in a collaborative way. Amanda, it feels like you're seeing that.
Well, we're definitely seeing that. Like almost immediately the students that we work with were like, I'll go live during the day. I'll practice prompts. I passed this exam last year. I know what to do. Like I'll step in, because they know that not all teachers are going to be able to go live all the time. And so, but I think like to that point, there is just this like fascinating level of creativity that it's existing from students and from everybody, but even just like an appreciation for school, right? Like how many kids are just like missing their teachers, missing their schools, missing their friends, missing just like the classroom environment. And that you, there's nothing that could have created that, right? Like that sense of just like, just so such deep appreciation for everything that's happening. I know students are really seeing how much their teachers are working too. And so my guess is that when school does reopen, it's just going to be this like joyous moment of like, you know, like what does next September feel like? It's not going to feel like any other, if we're back, if it's back and everything's back to normal, which who knows, but if it is, it's like this whole new level of just like, I don't know. It's like students are just going to really want to be there, just want to be there and learning. And that could lead to some really exciting times.
Hey, Tom, Tom, can I just jump in? I heard the same Lindsay points and totally agree. I love the theme around kind of learner agency and learners controlling the journey. I also heard and strongly believe, and we believe as a company, teachers have to be at the center as well. And as we're building this kind of new normal and this new future, you know, teachers have to be supported. I was actually on the phone with my sister last night. She's been teaching for 26 years in the state of Oregon, middle school. And she was saying her biggest challenge right now is just staying connected and making sure that every student knows what she's posting up in Google Classroom, that their parents knows. She's got some students she hasn't heard from since they've been out of school now for 3 weeks. And so really making sure, because no matter what agency a learner has, all right, and they're the most self-directed, even by the time they get to a senior or junior year, they still need somebody. They still need a teacher or teachers to help them stay on that path and stay on that journey. And I think that's critical.
Thanks. Adrian, in addition to this question of what new capabilities do you see being built, there's a question for you from Batisha Thames, who says, how is Seesaw providing a platform that provides learning feedback to students? So talk a little bit about how teachers are in the loop on providing feedback.
Sure.
I appreciate hearing how important it is that students know the person on the other end of the work cares. And she echoed your sentiment on how much it would suck to have a boss who throws your work away. So just maybe a word on the feedback question, and then if you want to add any thoughts on new capabilities that you see being developed.
Absolutely, and I want to echo both what Brian and Amanda are saying about just how important it is both on the student side and on the teacher side. And, you know, it's really about having a community that's centered around the student. It doesn't just have to be one person, doesn't just have to be the parent. It's really about making sure that that student feels really well supported. And so, you know, in Seesaw, what I think is really helpful is that you see the student work. The student work is really at the center of Seesaw. And then whoever else is connected, whether that's classmates, if that's teachers, if that's families, if that's grandparents, all of those people can give feedback back about the actual work that's being done and really connect to what the student is learning. And that's usually where we see this sort of student motivation or student light up. And that's really what we're all about. I mean, that's what we're trying to create more and more of. And this environment just creates some new opportunities for us to do that in new ways. So most of what we've done, at least on the technical side, is really just made it easier for people to bring their classroom home. We released this new home learning code that makes it really easy for a student to securely connect to their classroom and make sure that the family can only see that student's work and not other work in the classroom that they shouldn't have access to.
Yeah. Hey, just I want to end with a word of thanks to our panelists. Love the leadership that you guys are exhibiting, not only in your companies, but in the sector in a time of crisis. You're doing great work. You have great products. Thanks to your teams for all the resources that you guys have posted and for sharing your wisdom with us today. Thanks.
Yeah, Michael. Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone. I'm running the Cone Homeschool right now, and we are a Seesaw classroom, and we have grandparents all over the country, grandmas and grandpas, using Caribou to deliver reading instruction and even the mazes and the coloring. So huge fans of what you're doing, Amanda. And your shelter in place setup looks terrific. I think we're all gonna camp out there as soon as we can begin to travel. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining. It was a wonderful conversation. Quick reminder, we have the Mark Brackett Permission to Feel Coping in COVID session happening on Channel One. So make sure to go check that out. And thank you again, everyone, for participating in today's conversation. Hope everyone stays safe, and we'll see you all next week.